What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're not going to be talking about an 83-point game. We're not going to be talking about Bam Adebayo and that breakout, but we do have a breakout career-high game to talk about, and the good part for Wizards fans is that this was a Wizards player. This was not a dominant effort from an opponent like you've kind of been trained to see. This was the Bilal Coulibaly breakout game, and until about 2.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it looked like a solid game from Bilal, good games from Sar and Trey, and pretty much just another double-digit loss for Washington. And then Bilal went off, couldn't miss, made, I think scored 8 or maybe even 11 points in a row at the end of the game for the Wiz to storm back to erase a 19-point deficit and to send the game to overtime with a game-tying 3 as the time wound down. Now, in overtime, he scored 5 more, a combined 18 points of his career-high 29 Bilal had between the fourth quarter and overtime. Wasn't enough. You know, Bain, Suggs, Bancaro made some big shots, and ultimately the Wizards fell 136 to 131. But this was a really intriguing effort. It was a really intriguing effort from Bilal in terms of his offensive production, something that's not been as consistent as you'd like, but over the past couple games, you've seen it. And you also saw some good energy from Bob Carrington. I honestly, counting stats-wise, maybe it wasn't an unbelievable outing, but I thought this was one of his best games this season, and I'll talk more about that later. He was so good to the point where the Wizards benched him in overtime because they were like, we can't win this game. More on that in a bit. There's a lot of funny stuff throughout this game tanking-wise, but a really, really intriguing effort from Bilal Coulibaly. I'll take you through it right now. I'll get some other good performances in a bit, but I don't want to bury the lead. I want to start with sort of where this comeback began, and it begins in the fourth quarter. I don't know how many of you guys watched this game. Maybe you tuned in late when you saw how good Bilal was playing, and you sort of saw you know, the Wizards slowly coming back into this one. But I want to take you through Bilal and sort of those final minutes of the fourth quarter. He comes in with about 6.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Wizards are close. They're sort of hanging around. They're down about 10 to 12 points for a majority of the fourth, trailed by as many as 19 in the second half. But Bilal doesn't score his first points in the quarter after he subs back in until 2 minutes, 17 seconds left. He gets an and one with the Wizards down 112 to 106, makes the free throw. The Wizards are only down 3. Orlando goes down the other end. They make a 3. What does Bilal do? He storms back down the other end, uses his speed, his athleticism, gets by his defender pretty easily, gets to the rim, and one layup. It's just like when Bilal is aggressive, he is so tough to stop. And in this case, he gets back-to-back and ones. It's now a 3-point game, all right? Orlando goes down, they score again. But what does Bilal do? He dribbles right down and hits another floater, 117-114. Magic come down. They miss, but Bilal goes down. Chance for the Wizards to go down and take the lead, but he misses a jump shot. It was actually weird to see him miss because he couldn't miss for so long. Orlando comes back down. It's now, again, a 3-point game. What does Bilal do? He gets an assist. They had to attract so much attention for a player in Bilal that's not considered a scorer, showcases how Orlando had to guard him. And he blew by his defender, and the drop guy had to come and take him away. So what does he do? Uses his vision, which has improved all throughout his career, dump off to Leaky Black, who gets a dunk. 1-point game. And then, again, Orlando gets fouled, makes both free throws. I think it was Bane who made them. Bilal comes back down. Really tough floater off glass. A little lucky, certainly. Did he try to go off glass? I doubt it. But it went in. When you're hot, you're hot. 10 seconds left. Back down to a 1-point game. Bilal fouls. And then, again, Bane makes both free throws. And so now you're at a spot where you're the Wizards. You have no timeouts left. 9 seconds. You're down 3. Is Orlando going to foul or are they not going to foul? Who knows? But you're kind of running out of time. They've been playing this, we're going to get the easy 2 and foul, hope you miss, and then call a timeout game. No timeouts. You kind of got to go for broke here. Bilal dribbles down, has an open 3, sort of stops for a second, and it's a good contest. I think De Silva contested him. Double clutch 3 and banks it in. Again, is that a skilled shot? I don't know, but when you're hot, you're gonna get rewarded sometimes, maybe a little luck, and he banks another one in to tie the game at 123, 5.5 seconds left. That is unbelievable. That's 13 points in about 2.5 minutes for Bilal Coulibaly. A 13-point game for Bilal Coulibaly is something to be excited about, but he just took over. He said, "Look, I'm the only starter that's in the game at this moment. I'm gonna go and I'm gonna take this game over and do the best I can." I guess Will Riley was in it for a little bit as well, but I'm gonna take it over as best I can. We might lose, we might win, but I'm gonna do what I can. And he just showcased the athleticism to get downhill, to get to the bucket. He showcased the float game. He showcased the mid-range game. He showcased his outside game, because before that, he had made, I think, three triples before he made the game tying one, two of which I think were pretty much set up from great passes from Trae Young. The other was just sitting in the corner and actually making these shots that sometimes he just can't make. He was 0 of 6 from 3 last time against Orlando. Tonight, different story. But he ties the game at 123, sends it to overtime. Again, Orlando thought they would run away with this one. They were up 19 points, and the Wizards somehow, some way, scored 42 points and erased a 15-point fourth quarter deficit to send this one to overtime. Really good stuff from Bilal. In overtime, Bilal was good again. He had 5 points in the overtime period, one of which was another three that was open that he made. He finished with a career-high 29 points on 9 of 21 from the field, made 5 of his 11 triples, which is a really intriguing sign, 5 assists, 5 boards as well, a steal, a block, made all 6 of his free throws, showing that he can get to the line and convert there. Just an unbelievable performance. Obviously, the best scoring output I've seen from him, but the most aggressive I've seen him do it. And a lot of times, these are secondary buckets. Like, they're not buckets where Bilal's the best guy on the floor and everyone knows he's getting the rock. It's never really been like that. But tonight, with some injuries, but also a lot of tanking, some minutes restrictions, he was the guy down the stretch. And he passed that test with flying colors. He wasn't afraid of the moment. And I said on the last pod, like I've said all year, Bilal Coulibaly is going to run. He is a blank check at the moment. And it's not a blank check to where it's like, hey, well, you know, Will Dawkins, you're going to pay me whatever I want. The blank check is basically to represent he makes his own money. He makes his own contract. How Bilal Coulibaly plays down the stretch over the last 15 or so games will dictate the extension and how much money he gets per year in that extension this offseason. Because I'm very certain the Wizards will extend him. They did it for Corey Kispert. They did it for Denny Avdia. And those are two guys that Will Dawkins didn't draft. And you already saw he's traded both of them already. They were on good contracts. It worked out both times. Bilal Coulibaly is the first draft pick from Will Dawkins. He's contract extension eligible this offseason. He's going to get an extension. I'm very certain on that. How much will all be up to Bilal and how he plays. And some games, like the last time in Orlando, was a game where you're like, I don't know if he's worth as much as maybe he's going to hope for. But then it's nights like tonight, like he had against Utah. Where you're like, okay, we have something to work with. Like, this guy is an unbelievable on-ball defender, really good overall defender, likes the assignment, the hardest assignment on that end. That's fine. But when he gives you nights like this offensively, and he's only 21, he's only in his third year, the sky's the limit, man. You took him for upside, and the upside was showcased tonight, and it's been showcased a lot more in recent games than it had in the first half of the season. Which is a really good sign for Bilal on that contract. But he absolutely took over. Really happy for him. Really great performance. Really great fight from the Wizards. They were down and out. Obviously, at about the halfway point of the third, you knew that Trae Young, Trae Johnson, and Alex Saar on those minutes restrictions, they were done for the night. You knew you were down 19 points. And it's like, okay, where do we go from here? And they fought. You had the whole bench up. They were all screaming. Anthony Yeo had a big block on Desmond Bane at the end of the fourth quarter. Whole bench is up. Gil's talking smack to Bane. It was fun. Like, it was a fun game at the end to watch. And they lost, which is a really good sign. They fought. They pushed Orlando to the brink. And this is honestly an indictment on Orlando. Like, they can beat bad teams. They can't really beat the best teams. And they had to. They played all their starters, by the way, pretty much the entire game, even through overtime. And they needed OT to beat a lineup. They blew a 19-point lead and needed OT to beat a lineup with Bilal Coulibaly, Will Riley, Anthony Gill, Leaky Black, and Tristan Vukcevic at times. You had obviously John Muir in there at times, Bob Carrington in there at times. They're NBA players, but certainly not Washington's best. And they fought. And after a really embarrassing performance against the Miami Heat, one where you got completely disrespected, completely laughed at, completely clowned, and just played the worst defense I've ever seen to allow Bam to get 83 points, you needed to respond a little bit. And you lost, but this was some fight that you needed. And they can thank Bilal Coulibaly mainly for that fight. A couple of other things. You know, Alkzar, we'll get to him, Trae Young, in a bit. But I want to pull up my notes here from overtime, because there's a couple of things that I want to get to real quick. I already talked about sort of the game log and the scoring from Bilal in overtime. In overtime, okay, 123-123, Bob Carrington was really good tonight, okay? Bob Carrington finished in 28 minutes with 12 points on 5 of 7 from the field, and I keep saying it. He missed both of his threes. He didn't miss from inside the arc. I believe he got to the bucket three times and really tough finishes, but got 2 feet in the paint. There was other times he had 5 assists to just 1 turnover. A lot of those assists, he beat his defender off the dribble. He got into the paint, and he kicked it to an open shooter, or he passed it to an open big down low. That is what Bob Carrington needs to do. That is what I've been asking all season, what Wizards fans have been clamoring for, and he's doing it finally. And look, less turnovers, more efficiency, making more shots, teams better when he's on the floor, plus 11 tonight, got to the line twice, made both free throws. He was really good, okay? And I want to highlight some of his finishes as well, because in the first half, he got to the bucket, which again opens up so much, really tough finish as well. And then next possession down, pulls up for a mid-range dumper because they have to respect his drive. In the second half, he had a stretch where he had two straight drives where he went from the right wing, beat his man off the dribble to the left, and finished. Pretty tough buckets as well, back-to-back, and then comes down right after that and drills a mid-range dumper. And that's how he got his buckets. All five were either in the mid-range where he's at his best, or getting to the rim, where, again, he struggled. It's not even struggled when he gets to the rim. He struggles to get to the rim. But tonight he didn't. And it wasn't because he doesn't struggle because he doesn't try. He doesn't struggle because he's bad finishing around the rim. He just doesn't try to get to the rim as much as he should. And tonight, in recent games, he has. And obviously, it's paid off. So he was really good tonight. And I wanted to get out in front of that and mention it. Because on this podcast, I'm always going to be as objective as possible. Like, I'm going to talk about guys when they're playing really well. That's more fun for me. But you're also going to have to talk about it when they're bad. Like Trae Johnson, for example, he was really bad tonight. And we'll get to that in a second. Well, Riley wasn't that good tonight. We'll get to him in a second. But Bob Carrington's caught a lot of flack from a lot of Wizards fans this season, myself included. Constructive criticism, but still criticism at that. So really cool for him the last couple games, and especially tonight, to be able to put together performances like he did. Really good showing from Bub. I say all that to get to my main point, which is that Bub Carrington was on the floor for the entirety of that comeback. I'm pretty sure for most, if not all of the fourth quarter, for that 15-point comeback in the fourth to send it to overtime, Bub Carrington was on the floor. He was awesome as well. He was getting his teammates involved. He wasn't scoring as much late in the fourth quarter, but he was playing a really good floor game, being the point guard, the floor general that the Wizards have been asking to be for so long. He was that, and that is what aided the comeback. And then you get to overtime, and you go, where's Bob Carrington? You can spot his bright yellow shoes on the bench because he's sitting there next to his teammates, not on the floor for the final 5 minutes. Did not see the floor all of overtime. And again, we all know why. Me, everyone listening, you guys aren't dumb. We understand why they did it. Do I like it? Yes and no. I thought Bub deserved to be on the floor. I would have liked to see what he could have done. I don't know if it would have made you win the game or not, but I thought he deserved to be out there. But again, I get it, right? Now, you can't get mad if people call you out for tanking, because that's blatant. Bub Carrington was not in foul trouble. He only had 3 fouls. He was not playing bad. In fact, he was playing very good, and I think that's the reason he didn't play. And when you don't play in these situations when you're healthy for the Wizards, it's sort of a compliment. And I mentioned it with Justin Champagne when against the Pelicans and against the Jazz, he didn't play a second despite being healthy. And then you go against Miami and Orlando, and he's right back to his normal minutes allocation. That's not an indictment on Champagne. It's not an indictment on Bub. It's actually praise. It's a compliment because it's saying, hey, you're playing a little too good right now. We need to lose this game. We're not going to play you. And they benched Bub for the entire overtime period. I'm not mad at it, but it's blatantly tanking, to call a spade a spade. There was also a really funny moment on the broadcast. My dad and I couldn't stop laughing. We actually went back and re-listened to this part of the broadcast, just because we didn't actually think what we heard, like, was what we heard. And it was a moment where in overtime, the Wizards are battling with Orlando, right? Really close game. Orlando's all their starters are in, and you got Washington, who's getting big contributions and a three-pointer from Leaky Black. They're getting carried by Bilal Coulibaly. The point being that it's Washington's B team and some of its C team going up in big time overtime minutes in the clutch against Orlando's starters, a team that is trying to win a title. And the irony in that, obviously, is, look, you got a team that's trying to lose versus a team that's trying to win. And the team that's trying to lose looks like the better team, despite them not playing their real players. Okay, like, everyone understands that. But Chris Miller, the Wizards play-by-play guy, which, by the way, I've met Chris, great guy. This is in no way, making fun of Chris. I just thought it was funny that he kind of said the quiet part out loud. But Chris Miller goes, quote, "Orlando is literally trying to win this. They still have their starters in there, and the young Wizards are competing," end quote. I mean, Chris, again, saying the quiet part out loud, he's like, one team, Orlando, like, you guys are actually trying to win this game, and you're losing to a team, let's call a spade, is not trying to win. Eric Spoelstra said it in his pregame remarks tonight when they asked him, do you feel bad about what you did to get Bam Adebayo the 83? He said, I wouldn't apologize to anybody about it. I'd do it over again. His rationale was like, look, you have a team on the other side that is tanking. They are not trying to win. Everyone in the league knows it. And we already played a team like that in Utah at home, and we lost. So we needed Bam to go out there and try his best. And at the end, maybe you can get mad at me, but I don't care. That team's not trying to win. And honestly, that's the bigger problem. And so you have, obviously, Chris Miller kind of saying the quiet part out loud. You have opposing coaches just saying, look, we got to fix this. Everyone knows this team's not trying to win. So don't get mad at me when my player goes off on a team that's not trying to win. Just kind of funny when I heard Chris say that. And then you obviously, after that, have a bit of another late game blunder from Brian Keefe, realistically. Now, this one wasn't as bad as some of the others have been. You obviously have had a couple this season, notably the one where I don't know which team it was against early in the season, but the Wizards had a home game pretty early, probably within the first 10 to 20 games of the year. And I believe they allowed an offensive rebound, and they were down by three. And there was a good five, six, seven, maybe difference between game and shot clock. You had a timeout, and at that point, you're not going to foul, right? But what does Brian Keefe tell Keyshawn George to do? He tells him to foul. And then after the game says, hey, right hand up, I shouldn't have done that. I misread the clock time, all that. And it's happened multiple times this season, which you can't have from your NBA level coach. It can't happen, especially when it happens that often. And I noticed another late game blunder from Brian Keefe in this one. And I'll take you through it right now. Now, does this matter? No. The game, no matter how Keefe assessed the situation, I think the game was going to be over regardless. But I thought it was worth pointing out. I'll take you to this point, 136 to 131 in the fourth quarter. The Orlando Magic miss a shot, okay? But they get the offensive rebound. And I believe they collect the offensive rebound with roughly 18 seconds left in the game, which means, or maybe 20 seconds left. There's a 7 second difference between game and shot clock, okay? That's a lot. So you'll get the ball back with about 7-8 seconds if they take it all the way down. You do not have a timeout. Okay, so it's not like you can get the rebound, call a timeout, advance the ball, and save yourself a couple seconds. You're also down by 5 points. That's two possessions. And what does Ryan Keefe let happen? He allows the Magic to dribble out a majority of that clock, Desmond Bane takes a shot, a three with about 10 seconds left. Wizards get the rebound with about 7 seconds left. And now you just allowed Orlando to take 13 seconds off the clock. And by the time you get the rebound, you are at your own three-point line with no timeouts, and you need 5 points. And Keith's like screaming and like winding his arm to tell Bilal to go, go, go. Bilal dribbles it up the court. And you need a three. They double team him. He basically turns it over, and the Wizards don't even get a shot up. And again, like they, even if they get a shot up, they lose by two. But you found that situation 10 times out of 10. No coach is allowed, unless you're just giving up and throwing the white flag in, no coach is sitting there and saying, yeah, the best decision here is for the other team to take 13 seconds off the clock. We want the ball back down five, best case scenario, with 7 seconds left. And so what can we do? We can go down there with about 1 second left, maybe, when we were about to get our shot off, make a three, and then, oh, what are we going to do? Just force a turnover and then get up a two or a three, send it to overtime or win the game? Again, it's the Wizards lost this game regardless, and that doesn't matter most likely. But again, it's just another example of Brian Keefe. He's auditioning for the job this year, and I think for the most part, especially these last two games, I don't think that audition has gone too well. Now, will he get another crack? I'm inclined to think yes. I think he'll probably be back for next season. But if he's not, then I think a lot of it could be pointed to these late game situations where you got to rely on your coach to sort of settle everyone and make big decisions. And so far, he's come up short in that regard. And tonight there was another example of that. But that's sort of that end of the game, a lot going on there, but we can sort of get into some other observations I had from this one. And namely from Alex Saar, who I thought put together just 22 minutes, 23 minutes, but I thought put together another really productive performance, finished with 16 points on 6 of 12 from the field, 4 boards, 2 steals, 5 blocks, which is just incredible in 23 minutes. We kind of come accustomed to it from Saar, but still incredibly impressive feat for him to be able to accomplish that in such a short stint. Still on the minutes restriction, but it was supposed to be 16 to 20, Keith said, and he extended past that 23 tonight. So I would assume they're going to maybe slowly ramp him up. But again, didn't play the final half of the third, didn't play the entire fourth. Neither did Trey Young, neither did Trey Johnson. Not surprising there. But Saar is doing it in multiple ways. And he opened the game with a layup on Wendell Carter. He had two lobs that he caught from Alex Saar, from Trey Young. One was a dunk and one was a tip-in. But it was really cool to see in the pick and roll that two-man game really working. And you'll see that chemistry start to build. But it was nice to just see that connection forming in real time tonight. But the best part about Saar is that this face-up game that he's just adding, you know, in quiet, like he just kind of came back from injury and just has this face-up game where he'll catch it in the post. And instead of just backing and backing and backing down and then going over his left shoulder for a right hook or passing it out, like everyone knew he would do, he can just face up and he can jab. And if he gets you and he has a step, he'll get to the lane and he'll finish. And if he doesn't, and you're just playing off him, okay, I'll just shoot over you. He did it twice on Wendell Carter. I believe he made both of those attempts, nothing but net on both. So it's nice to see he's adding counters. He's evolving. And we've seen the development from year one to year two, but he's still getting better. And he'll continue to get better. But it's nice to see, like, oh, I need something else here. I can't just barrel down onto these guys that are bigger and stronger than me. They know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go right. I'm going to go over my left shoulder with a little hook or a push shot. Let me add this face-up game. And then he steps out and he can make a three. And now you're looking at him scoring from all three levels and you're sitting there and saying, okay, this guy's a little scary. He's a very good offensive player. He's becoming a more complete offensive player. And I thought tonight he showcased that. He was really good. He had one where he got a rebound and dribbled coast to coast with good speed right to the lane and nearly dunked on someone but got fouled and went to the line. It's just that type of activity on that end. Not even going to talk about, obviously, yet what he did on the defensive end with those 5 blocks and 2 steals. Just a menace around the rim. I mean, blocked Wendell Carter a couple times. I believe he blocked Paolo as well. Guys are afraid to go in. And he's just incredible at his timing. At defending without fouling. He met De Silva at the rim. De Silva tried to dunk on him. And that's one of the things I like about Saar. It's like, yes, he has the blocks. He's not afraid. He's gotten dunked on many times during his short career. But he's gotten a lot of blocks and met guys at the rim as well. And you need a fearlessness when you're a good rim protector. You need that. Daniel Gafford had it. Daniel Gafford's had so many blocks. He's also been put in the rim hundreds of times, but he's not afraid. And you need that in your rim protector. You need them to be fearless, not afraid to get dunked on. And Sarr's clearly showcasing that early in his career. He was great. Trae Young was great too. I mentioned the two-man game. What I like about Trae is his ability to, it looks the same every time he comes off a pick and roll. Whether he's going to throw the lob or like shoot the floater, I honestly, and as a compliment, I can't tell which one he's choosing until the ball is like at the rim. Like if it goes in, I'm like, oh, he took a floater. I thought he honestly lobbed that to Sarr. And then if he lobs it to Sarr, I'm like, I honestly thought he shot that. And it just was a perfect pass. And that's what happens with reps, and it happens over time. But it's so hard to guard. If you're that drop defender, what are you going to do? You have to pick. And if you pick, he's just going to make the best decision possible, shoot or pass. And that's why he's so tough to guard. He had a couple of threes, one with a sidestep triple, and another efficient night, just 21 minutes for him. Again, two more minutes than he had played against Utah in that first game. So he's getting more minutes as well. 15 points, 5 of 7 from the field, made 2 of his 4 threes. 6 assists to just 2 turnovers, 3 boards. I thought he played a really complete and good game. You can see the offense settling in. He got Trae a couple good looks. He got Bilal a couple good looks. Sarr as well. He could add 10 assists if guys made open looks. They didn't. But you're starting to see why the Wizards acquired Trae Young. And yeah, he kind of needs to be that good on that end because I mean, no one came into this, thinking that Trae Young was an all-world defender. We actually came in probably thinking the opposite. And tonight he did get exposed a lot by Orlando's guards. There was a couple where both Bane and Suggs just saw Trae and just barreled towards the rim. Because like, what is he gonna do? Stand in front and take a charge? He tried to, and they challenged it, and they didn't get the call. But you're gonna see a lot of that with Trae, unfortunately. It's one of the downsides with him being as small and slender as he is. People are gonna try to exploit him on the defensive end. And now the Hawks at times were able to get the most out of him on defense because they either hit him or they had good defenders around him. And I think Washington has good enough defenders around him to make it work. But that's obviously something they're going to have to consider schematically in the offseason when they're building this roster is we're going to be playing Trae Young 30 to 35 minutes a night. We're going to need to get enough defense around him to where we're not allowing 120 points per game. Because if you're the Wizards, you don't want to be a shootout team. Like the Hawks were a shootout team for a while, and that just didn't work. You got to defend, and you got to get out of it what you can, and hopefully the Wizards can figure something out. But I did notice Orlando exploited Trae various times down the floor. But he was really good offense on offense tonight, and that's really why you acquired him. So him and Sarr and obviously Bilal were great. You got some not so good performances from a couple of rookies, namely Trae Johnson, just 3 points on 1 of 11 from the field, 1 of 6 from three. A couple again open looks that he had been making. He had been shooting really well from three, 12 of 23 over his last three entering tonight. Just 1 of 6 tonight is not good. But he also turned the ball over a lot, which I did not like. And they were careless for the most part, and I noted them. One was a poor entry feed to Alex Sarr that was just pretty lazy and shouldn't have been thrown, kind of forced. Another, he basically just passed it to the other team. Like I think he lazily threw it to the wing and he thought his guy would meet the ball, but they just picked it off. And then there was another one where he forced another pass to Sarr, kind of pocket pass in traffic. Sarr couldn't handle it, got picked off. Really bad turnovers from Trae. Unforced errors led to some magic buckets. Can't have that. And then again, there were a couple times on the fast break where I thought he was pretty selfish. There was one time in particular in the third. And you saw Brian Keefe kind of throw his arms up, maybe towards the end of the first half. It was a 3-on-1. He had the ball, and Trae Young was kind of drifting over to the right wing for a three. Sarr was running down the other lane. And instead, Trae Johnson dribbled slowly and then dribbled out to the left to the 3-point line and just kind of boxed himself in, allowed, he retreated, so he allowed the Magic to catch up in transition. And then he took a contested step back three that wasn't even close. If I'm Brian Keefe, I'm mad. If I'm his teammates, I'm mad at that shot too. You try to get to the rim and you don't slow down, wait for the defense to catch up, and then take a contested three. That's not the look with a 3-on-1 break. Again, he's made these shots in the last three games. Tonight he didn't, and I thought he was pretty bad. One of his worst games as a rookie. which again will happen. And I say this, obviously, as I say it with the other praise moments, is you can't get too high, you can't get too low. You had some good games. This was one of his worst ones. I'm sure he'll bounce back. Well, Riley's been playing well too. He actually didn't. I don't think he played as bad as Trey Johnson played. I just think he missed some shots that he needs to make. He had a three. He had a nice turnaround fade, like he's been adding to his game. But there were a couple of layups. There was a couple of open threes that I think he typically knocks down. He didn't. Finished 3 of 10, 1 of 6 from 3. I didn't think he was particularly as good as he's been in recent games as well. Leaky Black, honestly, 12 points off the bench, 4 or 5, missed, made both of his threes. 4 boards, was a plus 14. Now, he's on a two-way. I don't know what Leaky Black and his role is in the future here, but I've actually thought he's played pretty well as this 3 and D guy. I thought he was a defensive guy. I didn't think he was a guy that could make the 3 as a good of a clip as he has. But he showcased that in recent games. I thought he was great. Champagne had a sequence in the first half. We had 3 offensive rebounds on one possession, finished with 12 points, 6 of 9 from the field, 4 boards, all 4 on the offensive glass. He had another in the second half where loose ball, and he just dove head first to poke it out to Bob Carrington, who then set up another teammate, I think it was Tristan Vukcevic, for an open 3 who made it. And so that's 5 points on 4 offensive rebounds from Dustin Champagne getting it loose ball. It's like, it's not going to be as talked about or appreciated now because the Wizards aren't winning games. But like next year, when he's doing this at a consistent basis again, and like the team's good, he'll start to get the praise like his brother's getting because they're doing similar things. And I think his brother's a little better of a shooter, obviously, but he's getting a lot of praise because the Spurs are really good and he's a big reason for it. And I think Champagne will start to get that next season as well. Tristan Vukcevic, 20 minutes, 11 boards. That's pretty impressive. 11 points as well. So a little sneaky double-double in there. I didn't think he was too impactful, especially on the defensive end, but always nice to see him getting his nose in and getting 11 rebounds. I mean, it was 6 more than the next closest Wizard, so nice to see him getting in the paint a little bit. But apart from that, you know, not much. Jaden Hardy, a DNP coach's decision. It seems like there's always one random guy who typically plays that just doesn't play in certain games. That happened to be Jaden Hardy tonight. And also, Jameer Watkins returned from injury. 16 minutes, 7 points. Not a bad return, pretty quiet, but not too shabby. Again, Sharif Cooper, I think he played 4 minutes the other night, just 3 minutes tonight. So again, not getting too much action there. But that's sort of a little bit of thoughts on each Wizard that played. But the real storyline here was Bilal Coulibaly. He was fantastic down the stretch. He was the reason this game was in overtime, the reason it was competitive, made that game tying 3, and really showcased like, okay, with the ball in my hands, like, I'm capable. And with the ball out of my hands, I'm capable and I can make these 3-point shots on a more consistent basis than maybe I've showed in recent games and recent seasons. And so it's nice to see Bilal Coulibaly sort of stepping up, taking initiative, and sort of showcasing why he deserves a pretty lucrative contract extension next season. There's still a long way to go. And it's still too often where it's like, oh, big game from Bilal and then he has a dud. And then big game from Bilal and then he has an okay game, then a dud. You'd like to see him continue to stack these games. He'll have every opportunity to sort of say, hey, this is how good I am. This is how much money I should get in the offseason. It's all in his hands. And tonight was a really good game from Bilal. Career high 29 points for the 21-year-old player just in year 3. But nonetheless, the Wizards fall 136 to 131. Pretty banner tank result. Good tank loss. So really, I mean, you can't be too upset when things like this happen. But the Wizards have obviously lost 10 in a row. And like we do with all these podcast episodes, we'll end it with the tank standings. Washington is 16 and 49. They are 34 and a half games off the NBA's best record for those that are curious. But I actually just noticed that Indiana lost tonight and they were officially eliminated from the playoffs. So I would assume like one or two more losses and like Washington will officially be eliminated. Spoiler, the Wizards were eliminated before they tipped off the season. So were a lot of these teams at the bottom, but officially they'll be eliminated, I would assume, pretty soon. But they're 16 and 49. They've lost 10 games in a row since they beat the Indiana Pacers those 2 times. They are a half game worse than the Brooklyn Nets, who lost again tonight, but still trailing them in the win column. So if they, you know, they just lost, I think, or played one less game. So they're still in a good spot in terms of the Brooklyn series. They still have to play them one more time in Brooklyn, but They are 3.5 games up on the Utah Jazz in the tank standings, and they are a full 5 games up on the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans won the other night against the Toronto Raptors. They are now 7-3 over their last 10. They're ascending, and they have some winnable games. They'll continue to win, but they are now 22-45. They have 6 more wins than the Wizards, and I can tell you right now, the Wizards are not winning 6 more games. So I'm fairly confident in saying that the Wizards are firmly locked into a bottom 5 record. I'm fairly confident in that. And if that's the case, then they would have a 99.4% chance of guaranteeing that they keep their pick. The only 0.6% chance would be if they somehow slip to the fifth worst record, surpassing Utah, but not surpassing the Pelicans. And then they have a 0.6% chance of getting the ninth pick, which would mean they lose their pick. And that's not going to happen, right? Because the Jazz have 20 wins. They have some winnable games coming up here. I still believe they have to play Sacramento and Brooklyn and New Orleans and all that stuff. While the Wizards have a really 6 more games against teams that are in the playoffs or playing right now. So Washington's in a really good spot. And they continue this sort of gauntlet of a stretch with another road game. I believe the last road game of this mini trip before they go home. And that's Saturday at 6 p.m. in Boston against the Celtics, who are currently second in the East. They're really good. Washington will probably get routed in that one. And that'll be fine. That'll be their 50th loss. They'll be 16-50. That will be their 11th straight loss. And again, it'll get them closer to guaranteeing that they keep their pick. But they're in a good spot in the tank standings, especially coming off some good performances and once a night, career high 29 from Bilal Coulibaly. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Wizards podcast. I'll be back to recap that game Saturday against the Boston Celtics, and that'll be the next time you hear from me. Again, thanks for always tuning in, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Wizards podcast. Thanks for listening as always. Go Wiz.